Good day, Thomas Jefferson Hour podcast listeners, and thank you for listening.
We're so appreciative. This program was, I'd have to say, a little discursive.
I'm not even sure I know what that means.
less focused on a single theme. We're responding to some mail.
I like that.
And then responding to some audio recordings you've made of people who've come to visit us,
well,
or people that recognized you.
Yeah. You were gone, unfortunately.
I was elsewhere.
Great if you'd have been.
I was so sorry when you told me that we'd had a friend named Mike that I met in the Mediterranean long ago, who happened to be in South Dakota, and on a whim
drove 6 hours.
He drove up here and got here, and the place was locked, but fortunately.
Well, it wasn't locked, but I was gone.
You were gone. All right.
So he waited in the lobby for a couple hours.
And he wasn't here to tell us that we're morons or that we should be banned in many states.
No, he wanted to come up and meet us.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Mike.
So I had him in the studio and we talked for a bit, and you'll hear that.
I hope he comes on the Jefferson Hour tour in France, which is next autumn, 2019. Finally, people keep saying to me, is the whole France thing over? Are you ever doing it? And there have been a whole series of reasons why we haven't been able to do it. But now we are. We're going to Jefferson's France in the autumn of 2019. We want everyone who wants that to come. There'll be two trips. There'll be the main trip, and then there'll be the add-on. And the add-on is the Canal du Midi, or the Canal de Languedoc.
Oh, wow. That's ambition.
Jefferson, I've been on that trip. Uh-huh. I led that trip once. Jefferson's time on the Canal du Midi was amongst the happiest time of his entire life. I've been on it once for 9 days. This will be shorter. It'll be about five. But there'll be two trips, the main trip and then the supplementary trip. And that'll be next fall. So people should be looking for that. It's on the website, jeffersonhour.com. And then there is the Steinbeck trip, March 2 through 8 in Monterey, and the two Jefferson Hour Humanities retreats at Loxaw Lodge this year, one on Shakespeare, backed by popular demand, and the second one is on water in the West. You know, water's becoming a bigger and bigger and bigger issue because of the population surge in the West and the results of global climate change. But listeners to the Thomas Jefferson Hour, this week was about listener response. Some very interesting listener response. I read that great letter about television. Then you read a counter letter saying, no, that was too hasty, that judgment that we should shut off our televisions.
A little foray into American folk music from the 70s.
We talked a little bit about Paul McCartney.
And John Prine.
And we mentioned John Denver, whether accurately or not.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground.
Quite a show, a lot of ground, and then we had
we had a lot of fun with Mike.
Poor Mike. I hope he's not offended.
Oh, I don't think he will be. I think
we were doing our Mystery Science Theater routine with Mike's commentary about how he drove from from Sioux Falls up to Bismarck to see us.
You know what Mike is?
No.
He's a member of the 1776 Club. And if you would like to support the Thomas Jefferson Hour, my friendly reminder, go to jeffersonhour.com. Click on donate. If you join the 1776 Club, you will gain access to just about every episode ever produced. You'll also be able to download, I don't know if anybody even has, well, I know one person has, the audiobook version of Common Sense a couple of weeks ago.
That you recorded?
And
one only? That's not very many.
Rick Kennerly did.
So people.
And he gave me a great review, said, you know, you could get a career doing this.
David Swenson, on his own recognizance, recorded all of Common Sense. You should listen.
If all I hear from is Rick Kennerly and it's positive, I'm fine.
That's it? You could read to one.
But then also you did the Declaration of Independence.
It was pretty interesting for me to read it in its entirety because it's longer than you think. It's more detailed than you think. You know, you usually think we hold these truths to be self-evident, but the bulk of it is this indictment of George III in the Parliament of England.
We hope you enjoy this week's show. It was a lot of fun for us.
And next week, we'll focus.
Good day, citizens. Good day, Thomas Jefferson Hour listeners. And welcome to this week's edition of the Thomas Jefferson Hour. This week, we are joined by the creator of the Thomas Jefferson Hour, Mr. Clay Jenkinson, seated across from me now.
Hello, my friend. I have a letter I want to read to you. May I?
Yes.
I walked into the barn, and I went to the milk room. You know, we have our postal cubbies there, mm-hmm. letters to you, letters to me.
Mm-hmm.
But here, this letter was written by pen by a man named Daniel P. Let's call it P. And I'm going to read it in its entirety.
Really?
It's short. Mr. Jenkinson, I write this in response to the essay on June 12, 2018, at the end of your program. That, sir, was a work almost on par with Thoreau or Emerson.
Now I know why you're reading it. Since, it was a good one, if I'm...
Since hearing your essay, I have only turned on the TV for a couple of minutes. Now I sit here and glance occasionally at the strange black mirror affixed to my wall and somewhat scoff at the idea of reactivation of it. There has been a noted increase in productivity in reading and work around the house. I recently heard a song by John Denver entitled Blow Up Your TV. I have half a mind to
actually,
do that.
Actually, that would be by John Prine.
He says John Denver.
Well, I think he recorded it, but it was written by John Prine.
I have half a mind, now you're correcting my fan, I have half a mind to do that. But damn sure at some point I will want to see the next work by Ken Burns or David Attenborough. My sincere thanks to you and Mr. Swenson for putting together this wonderful podcast. I have been listening a little over a year and hear the string music before I push the play button. Sincerely, Daniel A. Prager. Isn't that beautiful?
It is.
And he's going to blow... And it's a John Prine song? I've never heard it.
You've never heard this?
No, I've never heard it.
The chorus is, blow up your TV, throw away your papers, move to the country, find you a home.
It's a modern Candide. Voltaire at the end of Candide says, just go home and cultivate your garden.
Yeah, that's the rest of it. Grow a little garden, can a few peaches.
That's Candide. A modern Candide. I didn't know about it. Yeah. That's great. So, Daniel, thank you. I don't think that I can say the words Thoreau and Emerson without blushing, but the fact that you think that these essays, these Jefferson Watch essays, are useful gives me great joy. It's a lot of work writing them, David. Every time we have a Jefferson Hour coming.
Yeah, but it may be a lot of work writing them. I'm suspecting there are a few moments in your week that you enjoy more.
You know what I like to do? I like to have written.
Am I right?
I like to have written. People say, do you like to write? I say, yes, I like to have written. Writing is hard, but I love the process, and I love this chance that this gives me to step back and measure my terms a little and to try to provide some historical context, but also to give my own views without just blathering on, as I am currently doing.
That's quite all right. Blather away.
I'm blathering on. So thank you, Daniel.
Yeah, this is kind of a free-form show.
He's going to send $1 million now so we can get this into every household in this country.
You're so money organized.
I'm not. I just want this program to have its chance. Is that too much to ask?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
We have to earn that.
Oh, well, look.
We have to earn that.
The jury is in on that. If that's the case, the jury's in. Go ahead. You have better things to talk about.
I would disagree with you on that.
I want grace, not justice.
All you need to do is sit down and read all of the email when you get done with this show, when you go back to the world of the internet.
Is it on the whole positive?
Well, it doesn't matter. It's discussions. It's not some of it's positive, some of it's negative. Some of it is like really over the edge negative, and some, like the letter you just read,
that wasn't
are really
over the edge. That was truth with a capital T. How dare you?
We have we got one from Dan Sylvia.
Sylvia, I know Dan.
Yeah, okay. Well, he wrote about an unusual that a program inspires me to write twice, but here again, adjustments gave me the cause. In this instance, I take issue with your critique of television.
Now, see, just the opposite of Daniel.
In my mind, television is a medium, a mode of content delivery very much like the radio, the newspaper, and the Cineplex. Just as the radio became the ubiquitous technology, and that television has become the dominant medium. But his point is, it's just a delivery device.
Wrong. Because, look, I get it. It's a medium. But the medium is the message, as Marshall McLuhan said. I have a widescreen television. I remember when it was installed.
You know, that sounds good, but I don't know that that's true. I'll let you finish. Sorry.
What part were you interrupting about?
The medium is the message.
No, it is, because I have a widescreen television. When I sit in a chair and look at it, I'm just like a 2-month-old infant.
Oh, and you think you're special because of the era you live in?
Yes.
I was just doing interviews. I was going to talk to you about this all over the state at elder care facilities. And, you know, they talked about when you were on your farm, you needed two batteries. They were 6-volt, and many people used their windmills to charge them. But you needed two batteries. Do you know why?
Mm-mm.
One for the car and one for the radio. And how people would gather on Sundays to a house where there was a radio. So this addiction to electronics connecting us, it's not new.
Fundamentally different.
It might be better.
Fundamentally different.
It might be more intense. I don't think it is.
Because when you're listening to radio, as I do a lot, you are listening to the word. Your imagination may be picturing that world, but mm-hmm. you're listening to the word. And so it's primarily a verbal exercise in listening. And you're listening to argument, and you're listening to nuance. And then if you suddenly have pictures of a terrible fire or an explosion or a riot or a building coming down that's being imploded, you are so drawn to the visual that it starts to shut down your capacity to listen with discernment. And as I was attempting to say, the quality of our HD televisions is such that we're just mesmerized by them. They have a hypnotic effect on us, and they disarm us from A, doing other things, which is what my letter was talking about, and B, from having a level of genuine intellectual skepticism and discernment.
Let me go back to Dan's letter. He says that television gives Americans another method of overindulgence. Moreover, is more a symptom of society's ills than a cause. And he ends by saying, please remember that without the television, we would not have had Archie Bunker, Ken Burns, or Walter Cronkite. We need to raise our standards and not shoot the messenger. Yours in pursuit of knowledge, Dan.
Well, fair enough. I certainly believe that there is. I watched at the insistence of my child two things, one of which I want to talk to you about. But let me say the first one first, David. I watched a documentary on John McCain. And it was outstanding.
I haven't seen that yet.
You've got to watch it. It was outstanding. And
great.
My daughter's in New York. I'm here, and we talked afterwards, and we both said, we need more of him. We need more people like John McCain. But the second thing, this is, I bet you've seen this. Have you seen the Late Show thing about Paul McCartney in Liverpool?
Mm-hmm.
That is the greatest thing I ever saw. You tell people about it.
A friend of mine came back and said, you have to watch this. I was in tears.
David, I wept through the whole thing. I was sobbing when the curtain opened and the people in the pub in Liverpool.
Don't give it away.
Oh, but
don't give it away.
That's not a deal breaker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's hosted by James Corden.
And they go driving around
in
Liverpool.
And Paul McCartney shows up. So what's your point in all this?
My point is, that's great television visually. So I saw.
So is the John McCain thing.
I'm making the case for TV right now. I saw Paul McCartney live in Fargo a couple of years ago, but you know you're like a mile away. In this karaoke thing, you see he's beginning to look a little frail, but he still has it.
Well, he does show his age, but my goodness, he's 76.
But think of this, David.
75?
I mean, how many people are there in the world who are very nearly universally admired? I mean, I'm sure there are some McCartney detractors, but he's very nearly universally admired. He is the living embodiment of the hopefulness of the 60s, the innocence, the optimism, the belief that this was the age of Aquarius. He's still alive. He's magnificent.
Yeah, it's great. It's
and
great
in
fun.
This, the kind of somewhat slightly fragile McCartney is singing a little out of tune at times.
Back to your case for TV.
I'm saying that was great television.
And it was great television because we learned something.
And
we
the visuals really added to it.
We were engaged.
Yes.
But you're against television like
I think that if we turned off our televisions,
TV
yes. And I think that for me, it's like the fatal glass of beer. I can't watch 1 hour per week. If I start watching television, I'm at Three's Company Marathon.
Oh, no.
Yes, I am there eating Cheetos
I'm
at Three's Company Marathon.
We'll find someone that can talk to you about that.
No, true. Don't you?
No. On this subject, it was quite an essay, and I stopped at the end of it and said, man, that's you're on to something there. And a lot of people reacted that way. And we did get, if I may go back to letters, we did get a letter from someone asking, please, how can we hear that again? And you can find those every week.
They want to hear my essay on television?
Right. And if you can find those every week, if you go to jeffersonhour.com, you'll find links to that week's essay. Now, I don't know how long they keep them up.
Wasn't he going to create an anthology of the essays?
Yeah, well, we did last year, but this is a newer one. So for sure you can get it if you join the 1776 Club, which is a great way to support
the
show.
Or if you send me a case of wine, I'll put a hand-signed copy in the mail to you.
Any particular vintage?
Bordeaux, please.
And what?
Chateau Yquem.
And what year?
65.
And how many bottles?
Well, they come in cases of 12 or 24.
Geez, you don't ask for me. You are indulgent.
Hand-signed.
You are indulgent.
Yeah, great.
While you were away, I had a couple of encounters that I would love to share with you, if I might. A woman that I met in Valley City,
North Dakota, a town in eastern North Dakota.
It was just wonderful. And another gentleman drove 6 hours to get to Bismarck.
What was his name?
And I will reveal that in the next segment. But he drove 6 hours to come to Bismarck to visit us unannounced. And I wasn't here. And you,
I wasn't here. I was gone, actually.
You were out of the state.
I was somewhere else.
If not out of the country. And I was out of the studio. And he sat here and waited until I returned.
Whoa.
He sat in our lobby at the studio for at least 2 hours.
Well, wait a minute. Let me get this straight.
I'll get to it next segment.
He drove from South Dakota.
Right.
To the New Enlightenment Radio Network studio, not the barn.
Right.
Searching for us.
Well, to Mokoche Studios, actually.
And you met him.
I met him.
That's a long drive.
It is.
No, that's a long drive.
Right now, we need to take a short break. When we return, we shall introduce you to Mike and share part of the conversation he and I had. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Thomas Jefferson Hour.
We blew up our TV, threw our paper, went to the country, built a
So that's John Prine, and that is the modern Candide from Voltaire. Cultivate your garden, blow up your TV.
Yeah, it's actually titled Spanish Pipe Dream. I can't believe you haven't heard that.
I had never heard that before. Thank you. But did you say John Denver recorded it?
Perhaps.
It?
I do not know.
Maybe that was just a verbal slip.
You know who would know?
Who?
Chrysler.
You know, and I want to say Chrysler sent you what appears to be a self-portrait.
That's awful.
It's a picture of
he
John
sent
Adams.
A package, and I would just
why not to me,
well,
Chrysler?
That's what I assumed.
Why not to me, Chrysler?
Everything comes to you.
Yeah, I thought it was a
you're
self-portrait.
You're the one who asked for it. So I thought it was for you, and I texted him back and said, you know, by the way, your package arrives safely. I'll give it to Clay next time he's in. And he texted me back and said, it's for you, dummy.
Well, that's a double insult.
No, it's Chrysler's.
That's a double insult,
it's
Chrysler.
Chrysler's humor, and he's a great guy.
That's actually
and
well
it
done.
Turns out he's quite a good artist. It's a portrait. We can post this on the site. It's a portrait of John Adams.
Oh, I thought it was Chrysler.
And I wonder why he thought I should have.
Because you're an Adamsite, as everyone now knows. A skeptic
anyway, so
and a pessimist.
I just wanted to take advantage of a few minutes.
It was
to
beautiful work by Chrysler.
Publicly thank.
Chrysler.
For this wonderful
no,
gift.
You know, when I
and
saw
to point
it,
out he sent it to me, not you.
I walked into your office, and there it was, and I thought, that is a very fine portrait of John Adams, and I said, where did you get that? And you said the fatal words, Chrysler. That's all I know. I got nothing, Chrysler.
With your permission, I am going to play you something that I recorded while you were away.
So this is the one that you talked about before the break, the man who is a lives in Germany, but he happened to be in South Dakota, and he drove all the way from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to Bismarck?
He did.
Wow.
My name's Mike Kreinhop. I'm stationed in Germany, and I'm back in the States taking care of some pre-retirement things, and decided I was in South Dakota, and while I was catching up on some past episodes of the Thomas Jefferson Hour, I heard the April 24th issue where you mentioned my wife and I by name. As we were new,
that's
got to
be a
club members.
A weird phenomenon.
And I thought, I'm only 6 hours away. This is too good of an opportunity to pass up.
6 hours away.
A drive, yeah.
You drove 6 hours to come here.
I did. Well, considering where I live, 6 hours
is
nothing.
Meaning that he's usually in Germany.
Yeah. From Germany to the drive up here is nothing. Hmm. So, yeah, it's worth it.
Uh-huh. Well, great. And you're in the studio right now.
Yes.
And this is where, when we're in studio, we produce the show. So you said you're a little, well, first off, thanks very much for being a 1776 Club member.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for putting together a
we appreciate it.
An outstanding wow. production.
So you listened for a long time, or?
Yes, since probably 2009.
Wow.
Early on. And it was because of that that we learned about the Mediterranean cruise that Clay had put together through St.
Yeah, Trim long
Travel.
Ago.
Right,
baby.
Yeah, in your letter like that you sent, you ago. Mentioned that. Yeah,
so we joined him, met him in Athens. the rest of the group came from
we were in Cairo. We were in Israel.
And we had just a very enjoyable 14-day cruise and got to see Clay as Thomas Jefferson on the 4th of July out in the middle of the ocean.
Wow.
I forgot that.
So it was a... It was quite. They say you should never meet your heroes,
that's
but
my view too.
That turned out to be okay.
He would say, "Dream higher."
yes,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, what attracted you to the Jefferson Hour?
The history. The I lived in Virginia for a long time. So,
whereabouts in Virginia?
In a little town called Warrenton.
Oh, sure, I know where that is. I've
not
been
too
there.
Far from Manassas, and about 40 miles
a
west
place
of D.C.
Steeped in history.
Yes. So, always been enamored with Virginia and. And then I can't remember how I found the Jefferson Hour, but once I started listening to the very first episode, I was hooked. Mm-hmm. And then it was this, being in Germany, it's not on any of the radio stations, so it's purely podcast. Mm-hmm. So just keep waiting for the next one.
I want
to
be on
out.
German public radio, David.
Sitting across from Clay and doing this program, it's really a case of listening. Because the guy's knowledge is encyclopedic, photographic.
Mm, Jefferson, I trust.
He's just
brilliant. We're trying to embarrass you.
Yeah, I am embarrassed.
He continually amazes me with the insight he's got. And,
you're breaking
and
up now.
He is able to
That's it.
Tie events from the past to what we're going through.
Yes, I'm impressed with the way he can be in and out of character, even though Jefferson's views may be totally different than
they usually are.
Yeah, they often
but,
are.
But he presents them. And yeah. And I find myself, the more I listen, the better, the more broad my appreciation of the Constitution, of the way the government was founded.
Wow.
And it is an eye-opener.
There are those who, don't really, they're not students of history. And I feel like, especially if you're in government, you need to be, if you're in a position of leadership, because otherwise, as someone said, we're doomed to repeat it.
Right. It helps to know how you got where you are.
That, to me, what you just said, how we got where we are, is really the importance of the show. And, you'd think after, I've been doing this with Clay off and on for 10 years, and you'd think you'd run
this
out
is like the Mystery
of
Science
observations,
Theater.
Things to
it
discuss,
too,
but it never, it
two
just
whippersnappers.
Never ends.
Right. And that's the other thing that impresses me about the show is the fact that every episode is different.
That's because we don't
like
prepare.
You say, there's a new topic. Even when he's out of character and mm-hmm. you're talking about contemporary issues, mm-hmm. it's still a very enjoyable program.
There you
program.
Go.
So you've been listening a long time.
Yes. My wife and I both have been
so
listening.
So critique the show. What would you like more of? What would you like less of? What do you think? How's our balance?
I like the...
Oh, here it comes.
I like when you take a break from everything and start addressing the listeners' questions and answers.
Like this one.
That I would probably have more of that. I would have less of the musical interludes. I don't get those on the podcast.
You know, that's interesting. When we first started doing podcasts, and if I can go back that far, I talked to Nancy, Frankie, and Clay Jenkinson and said, well, we really ought to do podcasts. And it was like, well, what's that? And I explained, and, well, how's that good for us? And I said, you're going to have an audience all over the world eventually.
Correct.
And they
one listener in Germany,
but now
one in Denmark.
Completely converted. So when we started doing that, the podcasts initially were produced without music between. And I got a number of letters from people who said, I wish you would put the music back in because it gives us a break.
Having to listen to that guy.
So I did. Maybe what I ought to do is shorten the musical interlude. Would that satisfy you, sir?
That would. I would appreciate that, sir.
But I can do that.
Yeah, like on a podcast. So when I need to go do something different, I can hit the pause button or take it with me.
Right.
But were it not for the podcast, I would not know anything about the Jefferson
Well,
Network.
I will take that under advisement and see if within we're a few shows out right now. As you know, Clay's not in town. Otherwise, we would have
I was hiding
tried
in the,
to have
in the
him
garage.
Meet you as well. But his summer schedule is so busy. As you mentioned, the tours.
The cultural tours.
So give me a few shows to catch up, and I will shorten those musical interludes. We'll see what kind of reaction we get.
Well, being that's the only con to the show, don't let that bother you.
There are more cons.
There are two cons right at the center of it.
There are people who absolutely love it when we talk about gardens and Jefferson and gardening. Mm-hmm. And there are people who go, enough with the gardening already. There are people who get very upset when we talk about contemporary issues. I mean, it's such a volatile time. It's really hard not to get some blowback. If you talk about something like the Second Amendment, you get critical mail from both sides of the issue. And that's when I figure we've succeeded in trying to talk rationally about it, is when we have pro people upset or making suggestions and con people upset.
I agree. And if you're getting them, then people are listening. It's like, I can't remember who it was, said, even bad publicity is still publicity. But please don't shy away from the contentious issues.
No, you think that's good?
Oh, absolutely. Oh. Because it's another perspective, a different angle of looking at something.
Right.
And if, like your last episode where the one I just listened to was one of the people wrote in and said it was clear how they phrased the question, where they were coming from. So very polarized in one direction, but not apparently open to other views.
You bring up a really good point, and it's a tone that Clay strives for, and I follow his lead, and that's to civil discourse. There are political viewpoints that it's probably pretty obvious that I disagree with at times, but my attempt is to always find where those folks are coming from, mm-hmm. and try to understand it. And, you know, so I think that's worthwhile, and I hope we do continue that. But I also like your suggestion about more listeners.
We could use some.
And, you know, for a long time on the show, I've said, you know, call us. People can call us. They can leave us a voicemail for the president, for Clay. We'll answer it. If you're driving from South Dakota, I don't know how many people are going to do that from Germany, but, you know, here you are.
Right.
So you have any questions you'd like to present to either President Jefferson or Clay Jenkinson that I can relate to him?
Where's the barn?
Oh, where's sure. the barn?
There we go. Uh-huh. The skeptic.
Okay, moving on.
Okay. No, that's, again, today was just target of opportunity, just on the off chance that somebody would be here, and uh-huh. you are. Uh-huh. So I'm thrilled to get a peek behind the curtain uh-huh. on how the sausage is made.
Yeah, it's sausage.
And I am truly impressed with your studio.
Oh, it's a great little a great little room. Yeah,
it's deceptive when you see it from the street, but uh-huh. as you walk in and walk through the different studios, it's quite large.
I'm so glad to meet you. I'm sorry Clay isn't here. I'm sure he would have loved to have met you, but you've already met. And he has a bunch more of these cultural tours coming up. I think there's going to be one in France.
There is. Jefferson in France, fall of 2019.
That's a bit closer.
Jefferson in France, 2019.
Well, I appreciate the time that you've taken out of your day on a no-notice visit.
Yeah.
And again, thank you very much.
Once again, thank you. And thanks so much for being a 1776 Club member.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks so much. So that's what happened while you were away.
Mike from Germany and Sioux Falls came.
It was just a great
guy. How nice of him.
It
really,
was really,
really
nice. All,
Thank you,
all
Mike.
Kidding aside.
All the sarcasm aside.
Yeah, and there was enough of that in
well,
there.
Well, it was fun.
It was.
I like, do you ever watch Mystery Science Theater?
I remember that show. I don't even know if it's on anymore.
It's not on anymore. You can get it on YouTube, but there's an incredible episode on Hamlet.
Really?
Where they make fun of Hamlet, and it's so cool.
Well, that would be TV watch again. I'll check it out, though. I want to move on to a bit of listener mail, if I might. There's one here that I thought you would like to address. It's from Deanna Wallach. This is regarding your circumstances episode. She says, I just wanted to drop a line of protest. Apologies, I'm a couple of episodes behind. When Clay protests the Post and the Times showing favoritism towards the Clintons at the beginning of the episode. When he did, I was indignant. The New York Times has long been one of, if not the most anti-Clinton mainstream publication. This animosity leads way back to the Governor Bill days and has never particularly relented.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm unaware of that, and I should be more aware of it. So I take her point. Thank you for clarifying that and informing me. I'm just completely unaware of that.
She says several other outlets and members of the Times journalism family itself have wondered if the Times' strong anti-Clinton bend helped lead to her 2016 loss.
Hmm. You know, we got so much mail about the Washington Post's view that
right.
President Trump has lied more than 3,000 times. So I looked into it.
What'd you find?
Well, it depends on how you count. So if you want to talk about like identifiable, discrete, different mistruths, things that are what do they call that, where it's like Pinocchio, pants on fire,
yeah.
lies, it comes to several hundred. And then there's a lot of repetition. There's a, you know, he repeats himself. There are lots of instances that are of doubtful validity. So 3,000, that holds up from a certain point of view, but it's not as flabbergasting, let's say, as it might at first appear if you actually look at the, let's call them the substantive lies, the ones that really matter, rather than just a verbal quip here and a verbal quip there. I think that it is possible to dispute that figure of 3,000. It's sort of piling it on, even though technically you can.
Yeah, I think in looking into it, they count the same lies more.
Right,
than
so
once.
That doesn't really make sense to me.
But on the other hand, we're not used to presidents lying to us with that kind of frequency.
No, it's
regularity.
A whole new norm or lack of norm.
Well,
but,
let's hope not.
But, you know, the conservatives say in their letters to me, yeah, but they didn't say you could keep your physician. You know, there's a lot of anger about the handful of very, what are regarded as very serious mistruths that came out of Barack Obama's head. And they somehow regard that as more accountable because we know that Trump is kind of a bombastic figure, but Obama pretended to be a man of truth. And so they find that more objectionable than, say, you might or I might of Trump's whoppers.
Thanks, Deanna Wallach, for that. We also got one from Dave Berg, who says he's a longtime listener. And towards the end of the show, 1290, you answered a question from a listener about the Second Amendment.
Uh-oh.
You called for a national, robust, thoughtful, evidence-based conversation on the subject. I am sorry for being so un-Jeffersonian with my cynicism, but I'm asking if you think that we as a country have had a national, robust, thoughtful, evidence-based conversation on anything since the constitutional debates.
Wow.
And how, in this partisan atmosphere, we should go about getting one started.
You know, I don't want to take much time on this, David, but I'll say this, that when I moderate public forums, you often have to listen to some noise before you can get to some substance. People need to vent. They need to get something off of their chest. There's something they've been wanting to say, and they're angry, they're enraged, they're bitter, they're confused, they're frustrated. And I find that if they get to say the things that they need to say, they often then calm down and are willing to have a more serious conversation. Over the weekend, I got into it with somebody, and I steadfastly responded with civility. And by the end of the set of exchanges, we had come to some common ground. We still didn't agree, but by trying to find the center and saying, well, what might we agree on? Where are our points of view similar or identical? That solves a lot of problems. I think the American people are up to it. I'm not a cynic about this. I think we need to discipline ourselves, all of us, every one of us, you, me, everyone. But I think we can have these debates, but we need to agree that we're not just going to spout talking points, that we're actually going to try to dig in, do some historical research, listen carefully to experts, but not automatically to accept what they have to say, and then to say, well, how do we agree? Are there any areas here about the Second Amendment or about the Fifth Amendment or about abortion or about Supreme Court justices or stare decisis? Are there any areas where we can agree in some sense? And let's start from there. Let's see how long we can stay in the same equation. I'm an optimist about this. I'm not a pessimist.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's great.
Aren't you?
Oh, yeah, but, you know, you fluctuate sometimes.
Well, I have moods of great pessimism about where we're headed, but I think that people can do it. I think you just have to say, come on, let's, you get your talking points, I get mine. Now let's really talk.
We have been getting a lot of mail lately, but one piece of mail we've gotten a lot of is a lot of people that have made reservations for your Steinbeck tour.
The cultural tours.
Have you been following that?
Yes.
And I think we've had more people mail us and ask for more info and make reservations than I've ever seen before. Now, your Lewis and Clark tour,
full.
You'll be in the heat of that when this show broadcasts.
I go in the end of July for 10 days on that trip, but then there are two winter encampments. But first, the Steinbeck thing is March 2nd through 8th, 2019. March 2nd through 8th, you fly to San Jose. It's six or so days in John Steinbeck's Monterey and Salinas and so on. It's magnificent. Russ Eagle, my good friend, is the co-host of that. He's a Steinbeck guy. It's amazing journey through 24th. And David, next fall, the fall of 2019, finally, after years of dithering, Jefferson's France. We are actually going on our 10-day journey to Thomas Jefferson's France in the fall of 2019.
We are now, sir, going to take a short break. When we return, I've got a very special woman I want you to meet. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Thomas Jefferson Hour. Welcome back to the Thomas Jefferson Hour, your weekly conversation with or about President Thomas Jefferson. This week, we're joined by the creator of the Thomas Jefferson Hour, Mr. Clay Jenkinson. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, my friend.
I'm going to shift the conversation a little bit here, Clay. You and I were talking about what we've been up to these days, and I told you about a project that I'm working on for the North Dakota Council on the Arts, kind of different for me outside of what I normally do. I got contacted by an old dear friend of mine, Troy Geist, who I've worked with on projects for many years. And I got involved in a project where I'm traveling around to 10 different elder care facilities in North Dakota and interviewing elders.
All over the state?
Yes, all over the state. And it, you know, it just led to some fascinating conversations. Of course, a lot of these folks have a great deal in common. For instance, you would ask the group, how many of you grew up on family farms? And every hand would rise.
How many of you are Jefferson Hour listeners? Yeah.
Well, funny you should bring that up.
Yeah.
Because I was in one town, Valley City.
Which is in the east central part of the state.
Yeah, Cheyenne Care Facility there. And a woman kept looking at me and she finally said, "Are you on the Jefferson Hour?"
Wow. That had to be a bit heady.
Well, it was. And
you were recognized for your silken voice.
I don't know about that, but her name is Carol.
Do you do the Thomas Jefferson Hour?
That's, how did you know?
Well, I listen to it every chance I get.
Oh, that's great. Am I in trouble or am I okay?
Oh, it is an excellent program. I wish I had copies of all of them. I wish I had tapes of all of them because the way it's handled. Uh-huh. And the way they go through and bring the history in, and how's it affecting us today, and what should we be doing? And
Carol's in her 80s and just bright as a tack, and she had injured her hip, and she was there for rehabilitation.
So she's not there permanently.
I certainly hope not, because she needs to get back to her students.
She's a piano teacher, is
she's
not?
She's a music teacher, and yeah, I found out a little bit about her.
I'm Carol Sato. I'm a music teacher, and I do some publishing and things like this. And I miss my students like everything. I can't imagine not teaching. That's why people say now, "Are you still teaching?" Well, I'm still breathing. I have a little typed out thing that I put on my piano at home, my teaching piano. And it says, "When you're through learning, you're through." And I tell every student, that's not for you, that's for me. And I don't suppose there's been very many students that I haven't learned from.
That's pretty Jeffersonian, I think.
That's sweet. A typewritten note on the teaching piano.
In the beginning, she said, I was a teacher and I got into publishing. She just sort of glossed over that, but I looked her up. You know, it's quite an impressive woman. She was a North Dakota Music Teachers Association Fellow of the Year, a number of other awards and recognitions. But she got a call, as you told a great story about getting a call from a fellow in Florida and being asked to come and work for Columbia Pictures.
Whoa.
Publications there.
Amazing.
Director of Keyboard Publications. And she did that. But she's back in North Dakota. She still teaches. Let me play another line from her.
This is Carol of Valley City.
And she talks about how important Jefferson is to her.
I've read about Thomas Jefferson as much as I can. And some of the things that he said, let's see, I wish I could think of some of the quotes right now. But music is a vital part of life. I would say it's my passion where I can contribute and help others. But Thomas Jefferson is a model for me in many ways. So I need to increase my Thomas Jefferson library, because a lot of these things, you know, I have taken a lot of notes from the radio show. There were actually times I was a church organist and I thought, do I have to play or can I listen to the Thomas Jefferson Hour?
In our part of the world, the Thomas Jefferson Hour runs on Sunday morning, so we get that from churchgoers a lot.
I meet people and they say, I have to choose church or the Jefferson Hour. And I always say, come to the Jefferson Hour. Unitarianism, deism, the age of reason. Reason is our only oracle. And they just give me a kind of a look. But she was right when she said she wished that she had a Jefferson quote right at the tip of her tongue.
She did.
Jefferson said, music is the favorite passion of my soul. And he said that music is the one thing I envy in the French. It almost makes me covet their culture because their music is so divine.
Well, she did have a bit of a thank you for you, sir.
Oh, my.
Please give Clay my thanks again for all that he has done for me personally. I can't thank him universally, but for my family, because we have followed him wherever my kids have gone.
How sweet. That's great. You know, I meet people and they say, are you Mr. Jenkinson? I say, of course. And they say, I listen to you, and it makes a difference in my life. And I always think that's the highest praise.
It was just a joy to meet Carol. I feel so fortunate that I did meet her. And Carol, get well, get back to your students soon.
And we wish you well there in Valley City. Keep listening and teach your students well. I wish, David, if I could have done anything differently in my life, I would have learned music. I would have been able to play the violin or the clarinet, and I would have learned to paint.
Oh,
and I'm pitiful at both.
Well, it's not too late.
It's sort of pretty late.
No, it's not. It's not. You know, a ukulele, you could take it along on the, get a little waterproof case, take it along on the Lewis and Clark.
I should.
And
my father played the ukulele, and he tried to teach me when I was a boy.
Not that hard.
And he said, if you can play Sunny Side of the Street, you'll get lots of girls. Grab your hoe and get your hat. See, leave your worries on the doorstep.
You got melody.
Just
you got
direct
timing.
Your feet to the sunny side of the street.
Very good.
Yeah, he had a ukulele. I don't know if it worked. It didn't work for me.
Well, you should not give up. With all of the things that you have accomplished in your life, you should try again.
Somebody should send me a spectacular ukulele.
No, you should just go get one. Oh, because that's... if you bought it, it would mean more to you.
Well, maybe, but you know, a gift is a gift. Huh. Anyway, interesting that you've been recording all over the state with these senior citizens. What's the strangest place you've been so far?
Really, no strange places. Some very incredible stories. You know, I just really felt fortunate to hear this collective wisdom. It's almost like a forgotten segment of society, and they have so much life experience and wisdom. And it's kind of like Mike said in our previous segment: how can you know where you're going if you don't know where you came from? I was really the lucky one. I'm sure at some point these are all going to be made public and we'll let folks know if they're interested. But I really enjoyed myself and I learned a lot.
Well, and you know, from my point of view, they are the ones that made it possible to live here. They had harder lives against greater challenges through the 30s. They grew up in a much, much, much more difficult North Dakota than you and I live in, and they did it, and they gave it to us with all of its prosperity and its infrastructure and its educational system. We are the easy beneficiaries of these pioneers.
And in great part, they are very Jeffersonian. As I said before, you ask how many of you grew up on a family farm, and nearly every hand goes up.
They all did. But now if you go into an elementary school and ask that question, you get one little hand.
Maybe.
One little horny-handed hand of toil. One little gnarled hand with dirt under the fingernails.
One other thing that I noticed is that they all pretty much experienced some degree of poverty, but they all said, we were poor, but we didn't know it.
That's a universally said.
And the other thing was these farm families, they said we were poor, but we never went hungry.
Well, of course, they butchered their own hog.
Plant their own gardens.
Gathered their own chicken.
I spoke with a woman in Jamestown, North Dakota, who was 108 years old.
No way. 108. That's close to the record.
Her name is Blossom, but she doesn't go by that. Her mother gave her that name, and she thinks she probably got it from a book.
What does she call herself?
Bobby.
Wow, 108.
One of the things she talked about was food and how everything tasted so good back then. As you were, you know, they prepped their own food.
Well, it's like our tomato show.
But she said, now everything's out of a box.
And it's bland, it's processed.
Yeah. So.
Oh, well, this has got to be good for you because it deepens your own agrarian rootedness.
It's great for me. Speaking of which, how's your garden?
My tomatoes, we had one of the greatest thunderstorms I've ever been in a few days ago. And on the news, they were predicting, I don't know whether it was baseball-sized hail or beach ball hail, but they were saying the hail's going to destroy North Dakota.
Like softball, I think.
But huge hail.
Yeah.
And I thought, bring it, honey. I mean, I've never seen a hailstorm like that. I hoped it would just crush my whole house. But it didn't come. There was no hail, and my tomatoes look fantastic. They are the best-looking tomatoes I have ever grown if we don't get rained out. David, the winds were 75 miles an hour in gusts that night.
I can't believe it. I slept through that.
My cottonwood tree was just like bent over almost on its side. And I thought, why doesn't it snap? It just makes you fall in love with the resilience of nature. And then I went out the next day. The tomatoes are just fine.
Well, lastly, before we go to this week's essay, we're taping this a bit early because you are into your busy season.
I'm going off to Britain for a few days. Then I'm going on the Lewis and Clark Trail adventure that I do every summer. It's been crazy. And this time, Becky has decided not to drown me.
That's ominous.
I know. I'm worried.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that could mean something.
There's going to be no incident. I worry. You know, now I can't sleep at night.
Do you have cell phones out there?
No.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to watch my back.
Yeah, but you're a pacifist by nature, so...
I've never struck anyone in the whole course of my life.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about any upcoming Jefferson Hour shows?
Well, I've been interested in this area that I don't think we've ever talked about. Jefferson's political missteps. He had a few, and I want to go through those because I want to show that Jefferson, like every other great man, had off days, times when they're just not firing on all cylinders.
It took him a while to get into the spirit of the office or the swing of the office.
So I think everyone has this where you just, you know, you're for whatever biorhythms or circumstances or whatever's going on in your heart, you're a little tone deaf or you don't quite focus in clarity. And so I want to show that Jefferson himself was capable of all of this. I think that would be an interesting
conversation. I'll look forward to that. I wanted to do one on an article I read, Five Features of Better Arguments.
Oh, I saw that.
Looking towards
Jeffersonian.
Civil discussion, because I think we can always use more help on that. But it is time for this week's Jefferson Watch. What are you going to talk about this week?
I'm going to talk about how the country sometimes veers from the norm. You hear the word norms a lot these days. But it almost always finds its way back to the center. And I think that we're now living in kind of an anxious moment for a lot of different reasons, but we will, I hope, move back to the center in greater civility. That's my hope.
The pendulum swings.
Yeah, some people think the pendulum's going to swing right off the face of the earth. I think that maybe that's true, but my hope is that we move back to the center.
Well, as always, thank you for an enlightening conversation.
Thanks to Mike. Thanks to Carol. Thanks to you.
I apologize if we got a little bit out of hand with Mike. I hope they take it in the spirit of
Grizzler, if you just send me a Ben Franklin, I'll get over it.
All right. Thanks, Clay. And it is now time for this week's Jefferson Watch.
Roosevelt won an unprecedented third and then fourth term in 1936 and 1940. But just 2 years after FDR's death, the American people adopted the 22nd Amendment, ensuring that no future president would violate the unwritten constitutional norm of two terms only. During war scares, the Quasi-War of 1798, alien and sedition laws, the Civil War, Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus, World War I, the Red Scare and the Espionage Act, World War II, Japanese internment, the Cold War, Joseph McCarthy and the House Un-American Activities Committee. During those periods of crisis, civil liberties have been subordinated to what those in power regarded as national security and national survival. In every case, I believe, those who violated the Constitution were just wrong. I would have thought until a couple of weeks ago that no American of 2018 would retrospectively support the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. At any rate, my point is that after those national security scares, two things happened. First, once we had calmed down, we gravitated back towards greater respect for the Bill of Rights, greater adherence to American constitutional norms. But, second, every time such violations of the Bill of Rights occur, it makes it a little easier to justify the next set of Red Scare tactics. The power of the executive expands in crisis, and that power never quite fully subsides. We are not now living in an especially dangerous time. The economy is booming. We are at last winding down our disastrous wars in Central Asia and the Middle East. Islamic terrorism is still a very serious problem, but you have to admit that it has substantially subsided, and it has not been the existential threat that we all feared it was going to be, not yet, at least. And crime is down. So why is our president kicking down the guardrails of American small-c constitutional norms? Is it worth creating a national crisis over what are called the culture wars? Really? However imperfect a national candidate Hillary Clinton was, who really wants to lock her up? Assuming we could afford a Great Wall of America on our Mexican border, would it really solve the problems we are assured it would solve? However imperfect the FBI and the Department of Justice are, and dubious some of its actions, does anyone really believe that it is engaged in a deep state attempt to remove the current president by a kind of executive branch coup d'etat? Partisan they may at times be, but does anyone really think the great newspapers of this country routinely distort the facts in an attempt to bring down the president? Are they making up Scott Pruitt's speculations? Are they making up President Trump's clear attempts to obstruct the investigation? Did they invent Stormy Daniels? Did they invent the Access Hollywood tapes? Did they invent the president's deliberate snubbings of our longstanding allies? Most of what we know about President Trump's weaknesses as a man and president come from his own Twitter feed. How can that be fake news? My point is that we need to return to what Senator John McCain called regular order. We need to lower the temperature on both sides and get on with the public business of the most important nation on earth in a rational, sensible, and mutually respectful way. We are behaving in a time of peace and prosperity as if there were a series of existential threats to the future of America that can only be addressed in apocalyptic terms and a deliberate violation of American decency, due process, and American values. Fault, as I say, on both sides. Everyone needs to calm down, read more, watch Fox and MSNBC less, and we all need to agree that there is infinitely more right about America than wrong, and that in many respects we have never had it so good. We are lurching towards an existential crisis by letting the loudest demagogues on both sides scream incessantly that we are now already in an existential crisis. Chill, as my daughter says. Just chill. I'm Clay Jenkinson. We'll see you next week for another exciting edition of the Thomas Jefferson Hour.
The Thomas Jefferson Hour is brought to you each week by Dakota Sky Education. The program is distributed nationally by Prairie Public Radio. President Thomas Jefferson lived from 1743 to 1826, and this program presents his views. President Jefferson is portrayed by the award-winning humanities scholar and author, Clay S. Jenkinson. To obtain a copy of this or any past show for a $12 donation, please call 888-828-2853. Again, that number is 888-828-2853. This program is also available online at jeffersonhour.org and on iTunes.
If you'd like to correspond with President Jefferson or submit a question for him to answer on the program, please visit the website at jeffersonhour.org. The Thomas Jefferson Hour is produced at Mokoche Recording Studios in Bismarck, North Dakota. Music by Stephen Swinford. Thank you for listening. Please tune in again next week for another thought-provoking, historically accurate program through the eyes of Thomas Jefferson.